Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
Welcome to Dialed In, episode number Dose. And yes, we've done Spanish once already, but this is a special reason. It's our buddy Paco's birthday, Zach. Happy birthday, right, Paco. Episode Dose is for you.
Dave Mascaro, he's the man. He's a bad dude. He's the true Paco, the true Mexican. yeah, happy birthday, buddy. We're recording this on his birthday. I know it'll release a day or two after, but either way, figured that was a good way to start it off. So I know that he's a listener, so we really appreciate it, buddy. What's up, Jake?
Oh, just living the dream, trying to convince Herschel to go on down to Huntsville. I'm trying to tell him it's Easton's birthday weekend and that's what Easton wants to do for his birthday. And mm-hmm. You know, he only turned 7 once. I mean, he wants to go racing at Huntsville in his junior for his birthdays.
Yeah,
it's not exactly worked, but it hasn't failed, so that's a plus, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a good racing weekend down there. I know I saw your name, both of our names are on the shootout for Friday, so that's going to be a good time and ready for a great weekend down there. I know Clay City was the plan, but that race has been canceled, so the place to go for pretty much everybody around here, it's either going to be Beach Bend or it's going to be Huntsville, so we're going to try our luck down there a little bit farther south this year.
And I think it's kind of ironic that we're both driving past Beach Bend, and there's more to that, but probably not the platform to discuss that.
No, it's all good. I mean, you know, I hope they have a good race. I just, as far as my stuff, and I want to go down and go to Huntsville. I mean, as far as the racing itself goes, I mean, the prize money's a little bit better down there. So I think it's going to be a great time and a ton of Thanksgiving race going on this weekend. I'm sure a lot of you listeners and racers out there are getting ready to go out for the last time of 2018. So we'll have a lot to talk about with that next week. So I tried to do a little something called bracket racing this last weekend down at US 43 in Etheridge, Tennessee. It was a good time. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Didn't turn on too many wind lights, but we had fun.
Your car is really good. You should probably just dial what it's going to run.
That might be.
Whenever you're like 10 or better every hit, just, I mean, get inside of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that might be a better strategy. I don't know what I honestly don't know what I'm trying to do. One round I take, I take 4th out on a dragster dialed 459, and then I turn around and take 30 on a dragster dialed 464. So obviously whatever my plan was that second time didn't work out too well. Did manage to get one entry into 4th round and was 9 to his 15 and gave it back 8 thou. Killed a little more than I wanted to on that one. I think I crossed at 97 miles an hour.
Yeah, your car goes what, 111?
No, not quite. 107, 106. So yeah, a little bit too much. A little bit heavy on the brake that time. So, but US 43 though, I gotta tell you, it's a cool place. Awesome racetrack.
I love that place.
It is. I tell you what, the tree sits high in the air and it's close to you, and man, you cannot miss that thing. I love it. And it's no BS. It's they had cars running. They know how to run the cars good, and it's pretty neat. You drive down there, and both times that we went there this year, we passed a horse and buggy rolling through town right before you go in there. It's right in the middle of Amish country, and really, really beautiful place and good people. The owner's name is escaping me right now. I talked to the guy whenever I was leaving, and super good people. So I wish them nothing but success, and very glad that they had that race. That race wasn't on the schedule. And some other races that were planned for the weekend called off, and they stepped up and put on a 5 grander for everybody to go to. So, and it was pretty well attended. I'm not sure the car count. If I had to guess, I guess in the maybe 75 or 80 entries or something like that. So it was definitely a pretty well attended race and was ran quickly. I think final round was of course we were well on the road by that point, but I think it was 8 o'clock or something they were done. So
did Rick Bear win it? Because I feel like every time they swing the gates open, Rick Bear wins everything.
No, I think he got pretty far in the race, that's for sure. But no, I'm not. Gosh, now I'm feeling bad. I should have done my homework. I think
last time you and I were both there, we like parked next to each other and maybe said five words to each other, and that was because we raced each other and kicked my tail. But I think Rick Bear won like both classes that night.
No, he was winner and runner up. He won. He ran himself in the final in no box.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I was down to three that night in box, and then managed to screw that one up. But it was a good time. And I look forward to going to that track again more for sure next year. I'd like to see them. I know they've been putting on the five granders pretty regularly, and you know it's only about a 3.5-4 hour drive from the house. So you know if there's not a big race going on somewhere else, I'd definitely be down there.
Yep, you got that right. Law Chevrolet Buick in Boonville, Indiana is a family-owned sales and service center proudly serving the tri-state area for over 10 years. Law Chevrolet is located in Boonville, so tri-state would be, It's Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana?
That's right. That would be the tri of the tri-state.
Yeah. Racing has always been in the Law Chevrolet blood, and over the past few years, they have been blessed with the opportunity to serve hundreds of racers from all across the country. All of the crew at Law Chevrolet would like to thank each and every racer for the opportunity to do business. And remember, if you buy a vehicle anywhere else, it's not the tires you'll be kicking. So a big thank you to Steve Law, and go in there, buy your dream car. If they don't have it on the lot, they'll find it for you and tell them that you heard it from this podcast. You get 3 months of free gasoline up to $600. So thank you to the Law crew. And I think Steve Law is going to be in Huntsville this weekend with us. So we might have just a big old reunion.
Yeah. Hopefully it'd be good to see everybody, you know, and go to Law Chevy, you know, tell them that you heard it here. That way you can get the 3 months free gas. You know, they got a great selection of cars, and if it's something that they don't have there, they will find it for you. You know, great people to work with. And you know, I just wouldn't see a reason if you're going to buy a vehicle to go anywhere else.
Yeah. If you go in there looking for a vehicle, just ask for Josh. He'll be the one to find your vehicle. He'd be more than happy to locate the vehicle of your dreams, and he'll be excited to do it. Mm-hmm. We got a big winner here from the American Door Slammer Nationals this weekend, Zach, but give us a little rundown of who else turned on the electricity down there.
Okay, so Loose Rocker had their American Door Slammer Nationals, as Jake was saying, and Friday saw two former Loose Rocker champions, as Justin Skirt Vickers out of Alliance, Ohio, was up against Sean Carpenter, already has been a three-time Loose Rocker champ. And the winner there was Skirt. Justin Vickers took the victory in his beautiful silver and black Nova. And he killed the tree. 007 in the final, had 56 in the other lane. So, you know, great victory for him. And guy from Ohio going out of North Carolina and cashing a big check. And in the 20 grander on Saturday, saw Chris Bear, who we're going to have on the podcast in a little bit. We recorded that interview before we've done the rest of this. So you should be looking forward to listening to it. Chris Bear, very well spoken, very entertaining. I think it's one of the best interviews we had to date for sure. Great guy. So he took the win driving the S10 truck. You know, usually guy that you see in the dragster, and he showed that he can do it with doors as well. And he defeated Lou Greco out of Pennsylvania in the final. Heads up final round there for 20 grand. They were both dialed 580 and both run 581 with a six. So
pretty
won
interesting.
Won by three thou.
Pretty interesting final round that you want to listen to, because Chris kind of describes it from his point of view. So that's going to be it's pretty neat, because you kind of feel like you're in the car with him, the door truck.
Yeah. So and then they weren't done. On Sunday, they had another 10 grand race to run, and final round saw Jeff Krasinski in his Camaro take the win over Chris Mancini in his Chevy 2. A couple great looking cars, looking on the Drag Champ website right now, actually looking at the shot of the final round starting line. A couple of beautiful old Chevys staging up for 10 grand. So congrats to Jeff for taking a big win there.
And yeah, a little side note, Skirt's win on Friday happened to come on his longtime girlfriend Ashley's birthday. So congratulations to Skirt. And you know why they call him Skirt, Zach? I think you know this.
No, I don't. I mean, maybe the sliding across the finish line like Skirt,
that,
or what?
That dude will land a plane at the finish line. And I mean, without, and I've announced races before where I'm like, yeah, these two are about to crash, and mm-hmm. lo and behold, Skirt's looking at the other guy going across the finish line out his front windshield.
Yep. We talked about that. I don't remember the episode number, but yeah, we talked about that on the one of the episodes where we talked about the finish line driving at the final round. We talked about Justin. So yeah, Ohio going down to North Carolina and taking the door car win. So
you saw the big debate with those guys too, North Carolina. Oh, yeah. I'm just gonna say that there's an all-state challenge for a reason, and if I'm sure that, you know, if you don't make your all-state team but you still want to make your own team, that throw a little money at the Cummings family, let you have all the grudge races you want.
Right. Well, you know, and if then the dream team race next year would be a good for that too at Memphis. You know, you get your North Carolina team, Ohio team, and I know I'm planning on bringing a team again next year. I need to get that put together. We'll have to work that out. We'll make that part of the podcast and see if we can do any damage over there at the dream team race.
Yep. So Immokalee had their mm-hmm. Their big race last weekend also, and Saturday it was Steve Mueller. He got the final win light, and I don't have the runner-up results, so we apologize for that. But Sunday we do have the winner and runner-up results. Chris Galletti, we call him Popeye. He's always got a cigar hanging out of his mouth. But Chris ran Corey Galletti, podcast bump there in the final round. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty interesting, Zach.
Yeah, I saw so they did their burnouts, both backed up, and then they switched cars before they went down the racetrack. So pretty unique father and son final there for Corey and Chris. Awesome deal. Congrats to them. Man, they just what a dream season that the family has had. I mean, gosh, with all the win lights that Corey has seen and all the drama and the $1 million race crash and everything that's happened. But man, they just keep right on rolling to the winner's circle. Just a great job for both them guys.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the video after they got in their cars and took off, but Corey said that his car was sabotaged. He let go and it creeped out of the beams and came to a stop. So maybe Dad pulled the old fuel pump switch off or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Dad sabotaging son and to take the final round victory. Surely not. I bet there's some probably looked that way, but I'm sure that there was something else going on there. But hey, at least it made it to the final before it happened, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. So that'll roll us into our interview with Chris Baer. And this is going to be a good one, guys. So our interview with Chris Baer, here it is. So the year is ending out, and we're sitting here with the most recent $20,000 race winner. He's putting himself on a t-shirt for the second consecutive year. He's on a t-shirt earlier this year and getting the door truck on a t-shirt next year. Chris Bearman, how's it going?
Hey, not too bad. How about you guys? Thanks for the opportunity to join the show tonight.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on all your success this year. And we really appreciate you coming on the show. And if you would, Chris, please give us some background information on yourself, kind of your story of how you got involved in racing Just let everybody know a little bit more about what got you involved in the sport.
Oh, man. You know, thinking back, my dad. I was a track brat pretty much growing up all my life, 2-3 years old. Never missed a race. So always there on the weekends. Dad always, kind of did his thing. He had a 66 Chevy 2. That's kind of how I got my foundation, was just, you know, going to Milan Dragway, Norwalk, looking forward to going there every Saturday with him, you know, great friends. I think it was right around 9 when they started with the Junior Dragster League, went ahead and I had, you know, the fortunate pleasure of Dad, getting me a Junior Dragster, and, it's just kind of been history ever since then. You know, it's just addicting.
Yeah. And your dad's always a pleasure to be around at the racetrack. You never know what kind of quick remark he's got coming at you, but but the Chris Baer that we knew, I'm gonna say 3 to 4 years ago, is not the same Chris Baer we know today. And you used to partake and have a good time, and you were still really, really, really competitive then, and I've seen, you know, a change in behavior has made you just that much better, and that's scary.
I'm not gonna lie. And I was quite the wild child growing up. Obviously, I think Jake can attest to that. The scooter race said, I don't even remember. I don't even remember where we were at, if that can.
You paid my light bill that month.
You know, it's just, you know, honestly, I have, it's a testament to my wife and kid. You know, I love them dearly. You know, and just, yeah, I don't want to say saw error in my ways, but just kind of saw an opportunity to take it to the next level and, you know, just kind of refocus life, I guess, for lack of better terms.
I think it's paying off, to say the least.
Thank you. That's, I'm not gonna lie, it's rough, you know, because I still like to go out and have a good time, party with friends, do the wheel stands on the golf cart, you know, scooter burnouts, drift here and there, but, you know, roll razors, you know, but just, you know, I don't know, still have a part, still have a lot of fun, but, you know, maybe toned it down from a level 12 out of 10 down to like a level 6.
Yeah, we were at Lions Raceway Park for the Gunslinger races where we were at, and you rolled up on the scooter and said, $100 a hit, let's go, and as you caught the scooter from falling over, so, yeah, I remember that quite well, and Randy was just standing there shaking his head, and that's where I nicknamed Randy the handler of Chris Bear for a good while.
Yeah, that, I'm not going to lie to you, that was a very difficult job back in the day.
So, Chris, fresh off the $20,000 American Door Slammer Nationals victory, if you can kind of walk us through the day, you know, what kind of how did the day start out? How did they get rolling? Maybe a round or two that stand out from the others?
Oh, man. You know, actually, this weekend's first time I actually had a chance to drive the truck. It took us a little over 3 years to build, you know, and just actually was kind of going to call it a season after rocking. I was planning on going to the Million, but unfortunately, I ended up getting sent to our Athens, Texas facility for work for the entire week, so I couldn't be gone all week, and then obviously disappear for another 3 or 4 days to go down there, be away from the family. So just kind of, you know, put a halt to that, and then, you know, saw the opportunity when Randy had mentioned he was, you know, going to Jamaica for a wedding. He's like, man, he's like, you know, you got to go to this door car race. So, you know, kind of checked it out, and you know, Mike Beard being a great promoter, Loose Rockers, didn't want to miss on the opportunity. So, you know, talked to Dad a little bit, said, hey, man, it's been a while since it's just been me and you. Want to make a trip to Piedmont?
Man, you played that card?
Yeah.
That's dirty.
you know, and he said, yeah. So, you know, we rolled down there Friday, got in, pulled in the gate like 7:45 a.m. after driving all night long. Not going to lie, Friday was rough. You know, just wrong spots in line, struggled a little bit with, you know, obviously being the first time in a door car in quite a while. You know, not so much on the tree side, you know, I was hitting that pretty good. Just, you know, for some reason, the truck just wasn't the truck that, you know, Randy had driven over at 42 when he won the 75K. So, you know, leaned it out a little bit, made a quick chassis adjustment, quit doing my dragster style burnout and decided I was going to let it party a little bit. you know, rolled into Saturday, made a first, the first two. It was funny, the first guy, first round was a little rough. You know, the truck had been on 86 pretty much all day, 86 to like 89. What was it on Friday? Dial 86, go out there on a 520 car. End up going 87, taking 200, but down about 14 mile an hour, realizing I missed my mark on that one. So, went back up for the next round. I think I was 7 on the tree. Yeah, I was 10, then 7. And, you know, again, I can't even remember the gentleman I raced, but just another good race. You know, he was 6. I think he was under 2,000 more than I was. But, you know, pretty much running the thing flat out, she ran 79. and really just helped me dial in the car, you know. Trying to think. Second round, some dude threw like 10 total at me. I mean, I was 13 dead 4 for him. But, again, you know, 10 total makes me mathematically ineligible to let go. So, you know, kind of a confidence kicker, but, you know, just kept on going at it. And I don't know. I mean, before I knew it, we were getting down to, I think it was 20 some cars. And I just come sitting here thinking, I'm like, huh, might actually have a chance with this thing.
It's not junk.
No, exactly. Turned out, you know, this driving this door car stuff's kind of cool. But, you know, had an opportunity to meet Ernie Humes. Great dude. You know, actually really great racer too. AJ Buchanan was telling me, if you get up there and you got to run a Red Demon, just watch out, be on your game. You know, I don't even know, just went up there. I think we were both 005. I'm dead on 2. He's dead on 9. I think we're both down there stopping on each other, you know, and just, you know, kind of kept it rolling from there, had the momentum and, just the right spots in line when I needed to.
Seems like it worked out.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to complain.
Right. And then you roll into a, well, I watched the final just a little bit earlier tonight. I was a little bit behind on catching up on that. But so you both dialed 580 and go 81 with a 6. Tell us a little bit about that finish line decision.
Actually, I kind of tried to mess that one up, to be honest. I didn't realize, you know, the Beast and the Pontiac there could do about 119, 120. So when we both dialed heads up at 580, you know, I knew I had a couple on the bank, you know, not a couple hundred, nothing, but, you know, probably like maybe like a low 79. Yeah, cracked the tree, looked over after we launched. I'm like, okay, we're pretty much even. When I started to walk on them, I'm like, okay, this maybe Lou's falling off, or I didn't really get a good gauge at the tree. So, you know, crossing 330, I'm thinking, okay, go ahead and hit the brake. So I hit the brake once and hit about 450, hit it again. And I look over and I'm thinking, that son of a gun's spraying me. You know, not really thinking about that. That mile an hour, and gun was not the word that came to mind. I'm just, obviously you guys told me PG-13 here, so you know, I immediately just kind of looked over and I'm like, man, he's spraying me. That's cool, I got it too. So I went ahead and grabbed my horn and you know, just kind of nudge him a little bit there at the line to keep I think it was 3 thou ahead.
Yeah, the mile an hour looked weird in both lanes. I thought that I mean, loose car does hunt. I mean, that thing hauls the mail.
Oh my god, yeah, it does. You know, I think because I remember Huntley put that on Facebook. I want to say he was like 370-37 to the 330, and I'm like 71-7. You know, yep. So with the 3 thou up front and then 2 hun there, you know, I was pretty sure I had it in the bag, and he just started tracking me down. I'm like, this ain't right. Something's not wrong. The hell am I doing? So, you know, just I don't know, kind of like just reacted instinctively, grabbed my horn, same thing I'd usually do in the dragster, and, you know, luckily kept her ahead 3 thou.
Yeah, it paid off for sure.
Yeah,
that kind of goes on to my next question. Not really a question, I guess, but whenever you guys roll in the gate, and I know your dad works his absolute tail off, you guys have everything ready, the equipment's always top notch. What's that like? I want to know.
You know, it's
I want to know what it's like to get in a race car and not have to worry what's going to break.
You know, it's a great feeling, you know, don't get me wrong. It's a lot of work though, too. I mean, you know, Monday through Friday, you know, we go to a big race. And it's weird because like years past, 35, 40 weekends out of the year, I'm racing, you know, but, you know, I was blessed with a beautiful baby girl, March of 17, you know, and yeah, there's a lot of things I don't want to miss in life. So, you know, just kind of cutting the racing program back to 2, you know, weekends a month. No more than that. I mean, at the most, if I did 3 a month, I tried to only do 1 the next month. You know, just it gave us more opportunity because, you know, when you historically, you know, thinking about racing, you go to a long 3-day weekend. Monday, you got to unload your truck and trailer. You got to clean the cars. You got to take the motorhome, get it dumped. You got to go clean everything out. You got to drop oil. You got to go to valves. You know, there's a lot of maintenance people don't realize that takes place. A lot of times we're notorious for changing things. So, you know, whether it's a shock setup, ride height, converters, maybe carburetor adjustment, you know, just trying to fine tune that car. You know, I got bad, you know, but bad's not good enough. You want to make it flat nasty. So, you know, realizing what setups are right for the heat, what setup is right for a spring day, you know, what setup's right for the cold. And even during the times where, you know, you're racing, like at Piedmont, you know, when it's going to be hot during the day, not necessarily hot, but like 6, you know, in 30s at night. You know, all that stuff is just, you know, things you learn over, you know, a racing career and little tunes you've made in the past and kind of learning the things to do and not to do. You know, try not to repeat that or, you know, I guess continue, quote unquote, the definition of insanity, which is, you know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Yeah, and I know your dad believes in the testament that races are won in the shop. And, you know, you guys show that time and time again. And, you know, all your success you've had at Norwalk and around Ohio and now putting the smackdown across the nation.
I don't know about that. That's Kenny Underwood. I'll leave that kind of title there. You know, squirrels find nuts. You know, some are chubbier than others. And, you know, I'm a skinny squirrel, but I do seem to find myself in that winner circle every once in a blue moon. You know, good luck, right places in line. Everybody's got good equipment. You know, that's the thing. And it's just trying to, you know, I guess a lot of it is luck. Probably 80% of it, 20% of it's skill. You know, because I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've watched guys go out there and, like, you know, Sugar Shane or, well, Troy. Troy and I have ran each other probably 15 to 20 times this year. It seems like we got a magnet for each other. So much so that, you know, I just gave him my cell phone number. I'm like, dude, when we go to a race, text me what lane you're going to run and, like, when you're going up. So I'm just going to run the same lane you do. But, yeah, we ran at Rockingham. You know, he's, Jesus, what was he?
I remember this run. Yeah, it was
that's
nasty.
The run. He was 3-pack. You were 1-pack, wasn't it?
No, he's 3-pack. I'm 3-pack. 110 pounds. My way. And, yeah, that's what it was. He was 1-2, and I'm 3-0. And, you know, we get off the track, and, I mean, we'd already run each other, I think, twice before that, where I had got him on Friday. He's tripped up on me on Saturday to my 18. And then we had to run each other Sunday. So we get down to the ET shack, and Troy's already got the slip, and like, he's getting out of his car. So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, what are we doing? Am I just going to drive around and go back to the trailer? Is this, like, happy Troy, this mad Troy? And he looks at me, he's smiling.
That's okay, going cool. to get a drink, Troy.
Exactly. He goes, what were you up front? I'm like, well, I knew Trip zipped me the last time, so I bumped twice on you. I said, I just set up on two. He's like, well, you were 3. And I'm like, well, 3-0. I'm like, well, what the hell were you? He goes, 2-001. I'm like, well, that's 3. But wait a second, what? You know, but it's just, and that's one of the great things about racing, you know, just the camaraderie, the friendships, you know, the great races like that, and being able to, you know, give each other a hug or handshake afterwards, say good job, and root that dude on for the next round.
So you're why Troy raffled the car off.
No, I'm not saying that. No. God, why would he raffle a track car off? That thing is badass. But no, he's probably just, you know, trying to get some new equipment. You got to figure, so he puts 400 runs on a car in a year. You know, after a few years, you need some new pipe.
Right. So, Chris, I thought this would be a good question for you for sure. You know, just given your level of success over the years now, if you could give one piece of advice to a new racer that was getting into the sport, what would it be?
Oh, God. Practice, commitment, stay humble, and honestly, just sportsmanship, you know. You know, practice, obviously, the biggest thing in there is, you know, like a lot of people tell me all the time, like, man, you hit the tree really good. You know, how much do you practice the tree at home? I'm like, dude, I haven't hit a tree in... Well, what do you mean by that? I'm like, I just don't practice. You know, growing up, I was supposed to tree 1 hour every single night when I got home school, you know, and I did that for, God, I don't even know how long, all through juniors. And all that really does is build muscle memory. In my opinion, you know, I think the best way to practice a tree is, you know, go up there, hit it 5 times, walk away for a few hours, go back and see what you can do 5 more, you know, because you got to be consistent, of course, across an entire day, just not, you know, in a 30-minute time span. You know, the sportsmanship, you know, you got to remember that no matter what, you know, in this sport, there's always somebody looking up, you know, and we're, as people, I guess, creatures of habit, and we want to be like other people. So, you know, especially those in the limelight or maybe have a little bit of success, people do look up to you, and just make sure that you're, you know, another reason why Chris Bear had to grow up a little bit, but, you know, you want to lay out a good image, especially for yourself and the people that you're surrounded by, you know, just and staying humble, you know, even when you do endure success, just remember, you can go from a hero to a zero real quick.
Yeah, this sport is very good at showing people that. And that's obviously, you, if you're going to be a bracket racer, you better be OK with losing a lot.
Exactly.
It's going to happen quite often.
Right. You know, and then if you're not, then all of a sudden you're going to start getting courtesy rips in the shutdown area or. You
know. Yep. Yep. We're not going to go there.
Nice.
My next question, we kind of hinted to it earlier, but what kind of influence does Randy have on you? And I know you guys reflect off of each other and you guys compare notes and whatnot, but, you know, he brings a whole nother dynamic to your guys' racing team. And how did it come about for him to start driving for your dad?
God, man, I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, it just kind of goes back to growing up at the racetrack. Randy and I have been friends, before I can even remember, to be honest with you. I mean, I remember being a kid, you know, me, the Deason players, Shire, Gordy Olders, you know, all the kids at the racetrack, we'd have foot races. We get our stopwatches out in between our dad's rounds. And, you know, we time ourselves and we dial ourselves in and have like little foot races. You know, God, I got pictures of back in junior days when, you know, at Norwalk, Randy and I were just chilling in the trailer, hanging out. I can't even remember the year, but probably like 1999, maybe even 2000. I think Randy joined the team. You know, biggest thing is like at Norwalk, you can have 2 dragsters and you can race those at big money races, but, you know, a lot of times there's tracks that don't let you run the same class twice, even if you do have 2 cars. Randy is one who's always had a natural just gift to drag racing. And, you know, saw it as a great opportunity to, number one, you know, he's a friend both to myself and my dad, but, you know, a great racer, really competitive in the sport. You know, at the time, I think he actually worked for my dad over at Bears Auto Repair. Started working over at John Kyle's when they were first starting the APD business out of John's dad's garage. You know, actually his dad used to do transmission. Before John kind of got into the carburetors, Randy is what we call eagle eye. He knows everything about everybody. He knows what they're running, they're doing. He knows just, if you need an answer, you go to Randy. And it just compliments, we compliment each other nicely.
Yeah, and Randy is, I feel like Randy is more of a student of the game, and you, not necessarily that you're not unprepared, but a lot of times you wing it and just do your own thing. And Randy's got a, I mean, he sometimes come and say, hey, you might be doing this, but this guy's doing this, and it's going to look funny or something like that. I've seen him, you know, give you some advice with helmets on, which I know you can't do that to many people, but Randy and you are a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the nice part, too. I mean, we take the criticism from each other. We take the highs and the lows. And you're right. You know, he'll come over and be like, hey, man, you know, FYI, he was just dialed this. You know, he's bagging on you. Or, you know, hey, FYI, you know why he just dialed down, too? I'm like, yeah, he's going to jug hug me down there. You know, and he's like, okay, so what do you think he's going to grab it at? I'm thinking like 500, Randy's like, no, 450, because he didn't got a big enough shot or something like that. But, you know, it's also, too, you know, knowing like, you know, Randy, there for a minute might struggle on the tree. And it's like, hey, dude, you're lifting your shoulder. You're doing this. We're both just really observant people by nature, I guess. Yeah, again, just we compliment each other so nicely, you know, even though our personalities are kind of different, you know, really just being best friends kind of, I guess, builds a stronger relationship because, you know, like my marriage, you know, married my best friend. You know what I mean? I don't want to say that I want to marry Randy, but, you know, it's nice to have that marriage on the race.
I mean, I wasn't going to say it.
I just, you know, and it's funny because like even at work, everybody's always like, you know, how do you come up with this stuff? And it's like, dude, it's like a foundation to my house or, you know, my foundation to the racing platform. Your foundation's only as good as the effort you put up, you know, fine tune little things, making sure every brick in your house is laid out appropriately. If you don't have strong bricks, your house is going to crumble. Same with your racing program. You know, you got to fine tune everything and it might not be perfect. Like I said earlier, you might have a bad car, but it might not be nasty. So it's trying to figure out the difference between a bad and nasty, you know, and that's a nice part again about, you know, my dad, who's got just that commitment to success, that drive to win, you know, and he'll tell you that's why he don't race. My dad, you know, he's better than me on the starting line, but just unfortunately, I don't, was never really that great at the finish line. Whereas I was kind of the opposite. I had to kind of work my way into the starting line theory part of it. And that's, you know, kind of why it takes me so long to pre-stage is just, I'm a perfectionist. I feel like I'm OCD. Everything's got to be the same every single time, same routine, same everything. You know, and then just, you know, being kind of a decent driver at the finish line, you know, I don't know. I don't even know where I was going with that. Sorry.
No, it's completely okay. Good. But we'll get to the staging routine here in a minute. We'll see if Zach's got any more questions for you or not.
No, I mean, really, I mean, all I was going to ask about as far as moving forward, what's your plans for 2019? More the same, I would imagine, or?
Pretty much. I mean, just, you know, sticking to the same routine we got, same racing team, you know, driving the truck a little bit more here and there, kind of the same platform, you know, focusing more on the big money races rather than the local bracket programs, you know, just kind of making sure I put family first, racing second, work third.
So Randy got a new car last year. Does that mean you're getting one this year, or are you waiting another year?
No, actually, we're going to probably wait another year before we off mine.
It used to be every other year, right?
Yeah, basically, like every 2 years, we like to try to, you know, resell the cars just because, you know, resale value on a dragster kind of depreciates quickly, more so than a door car. Door cars, if anything, kind of go up in value in time. But, you know, dragsters aren't really that kind of, I don't know how you want to say, they don't hold their value as well.
I don't know. Have you seen people trying to sell them on Facebook lately?
Nice. Yeah. No comment.
I mean, now's the time you can make money on your used car.
True, very true. But, you know, and honestly, I mean, shoot, mine's a 2014. So, I mean, yeah, I've had my car now for 4 years, you know, probably race it a fifth year and then, you know, just turn around and sell it. I don't know.
Sweet. So this goes, now I got a few quick questions here to cap this thing off and a little bit on the lighter humor side. So Randy Shire is very well known for taking his time and not seeing over the side of the race car when he's staging. Did they have to take the seat out to put a bigger fuel cell in his car?
No. You know, standard 5 gallon. He might run it a little bit lean on the idle mixture setting, but
I think he's got to.
Yeah, we like to start cold. So, you know, it gives us plenty of time to warm up by the time we pre-stage.
just to go ahead and get it out of the way, who has the better racers, Ohio or North Carolina?
No comment.
Oh, God.
Not getting in that one.
Whenever I say this is a Chris Bear that's changed, that 3 years ago, Chris Bear would have had an hour-long rant on that one.
Chris Bear would have gone off the deep end on that one. But, you know, nope, politically correct. You know, who'd you vote for? You know, well, the other guy, I can't even remember who it was now at this point. You know, it's like I plead the fifth.
Yep. Does your dad ever smile?
No. No, well, actually, yes. His smirk is actually his smile. You know, and that's the funny part. Like, man, I don't even know. My dad don't drink. But, you know, if we're at a racetrack, we crack off a 10 or 20, man. That dude can pound a beer quicker than I think anybody can. Like, he just, it's like, I'm surprised you don't break the bottle when he drinks it. But he's just, you know, he's happy, go lucky by heart and nature. But, you know, he don't smile a whole lot. Just like, you know, if we do win, you know, he's not one to celebrate or jump or hoot and holler. He'll crack a smirk and fold his arms up and walk back to the four-wheeler, start heading to the trailer. Yep. You know, he's just not a real emotional kind of guy.
Him pounding a beer is probably keeping him from pounding you.
There's been a few of those situations as well.
You want me to drive it for you, too?
Exactly. Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I got to keep the streak alive here. I've asked every guest that we've had on the show so far this question. What is your favorite or what is your go-to race day meal?
Go-to race day meal. Man, I really don't have one, to be honest. Ask any of my friends. I'm really just I'm a fat kid at heart. You know, I eat all day. I eat all day long. I got to have my coffee in the morning. But I'm in the course of a day. I remember Mark Horton years ago. I can't remember. We were at Muncie and I ended up knocking a lifter out in my car. And I asked him, I said, you know, I'm just going to load up. He's like, man, just hop in my car. I'm like, Mark, I've never gone 430s. He's like, don't worry about it. Just keep it straight. You know, and I did really well jumping in his car, you know, going 430s, 440s, you know, but it was just funny because he asked me at the end of the day, he goes, I got to ask you a question. I'm like, what's that? He goes, where the hell do you put it? And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, the one round after first round, you disappear. You come back with a cheeseburger and fry. Second round, you come back with two chili dogs. Third round, you came back with another cheeseburger. Fourth round, you came back with a deli. Fifth round, you went back up and got another chili dog. He's like, how do you just pound the food and just keep racing? Don't gain weight. I'm just like, I don't know. I eat when I'm nervous. So I just, you know, I'm an all day long eater and I eat a ton. So I really guess I don't have a go-to game day meal or race day meal. Mm-hmm. Pretty much I just love food in general.
Yeah. It's nice. It's different hopping in a 430 car when you've never driven one, and it doesn't feel like you're going 430 till you go to drive the finish line, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, when all of a sudden you're, you know, used to going 480s at like 140 and you hop in a 430 car at about 158, you're like, even the 18 mile an hour is a big swing, especially back then because, you know, there was no separation of door cars and drags. So, you know, when you get a 7.0 door car or something, you know, you're swinging them, you know, almost 60 miles an hour. You're like, holy shit, this gap's closing quick, you know.
I had the same problem. I drove the ProCharge car in Michigan. Felt like, yeah, I was going five flat until I rolled up on Lampton, dialed 470.
Nice. So I was going to say, how about the round? I think me and you had to run the one round. And, you know, I'm down there. I'm like, oh yeah, you got me a tree on this. So get down there. Just try to make it as close as I could. But still
very,
got wore out.
Rarely does that ever happen.
Oh, whatever. Got wore out by Jake Hodge.
Yeah, I was... Hey.
And you didn't break.
I was two take one on Lampton and got down to the ET check. Nice. And I beat him there and I grabbed the yellow one and said, just give him the white one and tell him I'm sorry. Drove off. And I looked, oh, I looked awesome. Back just in time to read his lips saying, he said what? And he shut his car off.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
But anyway, man, it's been great talking to you. And I know you have a lot of work to get caught up on. You know, it's hard to win 20 grand and come back home and go to work. But congratulations once again. And
thank
stay
you,
out
guys.
Of the truck, would you?
Nice. Yeah. I don't know, man. I had a lot of fun in that thing. I mean, God, I can't even remember the last time I did drive a door car, to be honest with you. They're a whole different breed. And, you know, it's different to kind of be in that closed kind of caption. Everything's in slow motion. But it's just a lot of fun. It's something different, you know, and that's actually one thing that's great about racing. You know, if you find yourself getting in a slump, you know, whether it's on the starting line or finish line or something, just change something up, you know, change your butt and change the way you release. You know, throw yourself off so you got to refocus effort. You know, and that's one of the things. What's that?
Do you have any more advice that works? I change cars like every weekend and I haven't won a thing all year.
I don't know. Try harder.
Try harder.
Buy more entries. Yeah. No, I mean, and hell, I mean, that's another thing about racing. You know, a lot of your races, you know, you laid down good laps and just unfortunately the wrong spot in line, and the other guy's just a thou or two better. But you know, again, that's just
watching the million. Watch where you.
No, you know, that's a funny thing about that. I usually, man, I don't watch racing. I love to compete. I hate to watch it. If I can't participate, I want nothing to do with it. I don't read about it. I don't get online and check results. I don't watch it on live feed unless my buddies are racing and David's texting me or something. I want to watch Barn Find, but I don't really read my National Dragster. I don't don't know. It's weird. You know, I race my car. I come home. I work a lot of hours and time with my family. Other than that, I'm kind of a boring guy.
Well, that's good. We'll keep your theory of the other guy was 1 to 2 thigh better then. We don't have proof that that was not the case.
Right. Nice. I don't know. I'm going to have to text David as soon as we get out of here and be like, hey, man, you got any of these time slips I can see?
Yep. But it's been great talking to you. And David listens to these every week. So shout out to David Davis. He texts me about every week and was like, hey, man, where's the podcast at? So we need to get a sleep doctor on here.
Yeah, we do. We need to get David on this thing. You know, actually, that's another great friend, another guy that I can kind of get test the driver's meetings we have, just getting together, you know, talking theory, spitballing ideas, you know, setups, you know, with him having the car, us having a door car now, you know, what works, what don't work, tire setups, chassis setups, shocks, whatever it might be. And, you know, it's nice to have kind of that team. I don't know, that's what makes racing great, you know, knowing that you can go somewhere on a Friday and he's saving a pit spot for me next to him, vice versa. If we get there before he does, I'm trying to save him a spot, cooking with each other, drink a little bit here and there.
Listen to Norm complain about him. That's the
nice part. Now, I think that's my dad and Norm getting together to complain about both of us.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And I told David once he finally seals the deal on something, we'll have him on here. There's not an award for the most rounds won without the final round being won. So if that was the case, you and David would have one episode.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. That's what I was texting him. What was it? His girlfriend, you know, Lindsay, was texting me after the 20K. She goes, oh, my God, congratulations. You know, we're all texting back and forth and joking. And, you know, I guess the first time I'll be cocky for a second. I said, hey, you know what the difference between me and David is? He goes, what's that? She goes, what's that? I'm like, I finish.
Oh, my keep God. Balls, keep all snide comments to myself.
Oh, wait a second. Yeah, that probably didn't come out right.
Hey, that's all right.
You
can seal the deal on a $20,000 final. It's all right.
Oh, my God. That's funny. But all right, man. No, man, I do appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity. And, you know, just want to wish you guys a nice night. And, you know, looking forward to listening to this thing on Facebook.
Yep. We're pulling for you. And we'll see you next year, man.
Yeah, awesome. Chris, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on Dialed In. We really appreciate it. And I wish you nothing but success, buddy. Thank you very much.
Hey, again, thanks, guys, for the opportunity. I want to wish you guys a good one. Look forward to catching up with you in 2019.
So that was an awesome interview with Chris Berzak, and that's going to be one for the record books.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Great talking to Chris, and, you know, the stuff that it is just talking to him and, you know, the stuff that wasn't recorded, you know, what a great guy. Very, very, very intelligent, very well-spoken, and, you know, just had a great time talking to him. We didn't want to stop talking to him. It went on, I think, it was about an hour total.
Yeah, and we stopped recording and kept talking after that, so it's been a good while.
Mm-hmm. He's a great guy, and there's, you can definitely see the reason why he's as successful as he is. Extremely bright. That comes across, you know, right away when you start talking to the dude. And I'm sure that the win lights for him are just going to keep on coming in the future. So stay away from Barron Motorsports.
I'm more or less upset with Randy Shire because, as I told you, I sent Randy a message about 4 hours before the interview and said, hey, man, let's get some dirt on Chris. What can we get him talking about? He wouldn't do it. So that's a friend of all friends right there. So shout out to Randy Shire for not making the interview better than it already was.
Yeah, that's a true friend right there. I tell you, you know, there was some dirt to throw out there, but good on Randy for not doing it, and good on Randy for you know, sending him out there with the truck and letting him have at it. So that's going to roll us into our InMotion Solutions final round conversation as we wrap up the episode dose here. You know, I was trying to think of something good to come up with, and it's just kind of been something that I think has been at the forefront of what people have been talking about with the announcement of NHRA cutting back the amount of national events they're going to race pro stock at next year. I know it's not necessarily a bracket racing conversation, but it kind of hits home for me personally, because I mean, I think I mentioned this before. I mean, as a kid and growing up and always watching all the national events on TV, you know, there's nothing more than I really wanted to be than a pro stock driver. You know, I just always thought that was really the driver's class, and it was really the tuner's class. As far as, I mean, I know that the fuel classes are tough. Don't get me wrong, but to make 500 cubic inch engine, you know, with the clutch and to run the speeds and to get the cars down the track like they have for the years has always been something that I've been extremely interested in, and I hate to see it on the decline. So why don't we we just kind of ideas on what NHRA could do to save pro stock. What direction do we think that it might go in, or what direction could it go in that would bring it back to its former glory? I mean, hell, I remember when U.S. Nationals had 35 cars trying to get in for 16 spots. So, you know, just what way, Jake, I mean, anything that you can think of that could return it to its former glory?
Yeah, and not necessarily any way without bankrupting the current teams to, you know, now they, if they, you know, put a different mandate on engines or requirements, you know, that they would obviously have $100,000 boat anchors or $100,000 plus, because I mean, you had nothing to do with them. But everybody wants to cry that factory stock's the way to go, and I disagree. I was sitting here looking at the points from this year, and Leah Pritchett obviously won with 400 plus. There are a total of, let's see here, 13 drivers with 200 points or more. That's not even a full field, you know, and that's, I don't know what you can appetize these factory stock guys with a little more. And some of these guys are on the list just because they've driven cars that other people have driven throughout the year. It's not like one guy's been stuck in the same car. There's a car that's been passed around to two or three different people that have been driving. And, you know, I don't think factory stock's the answer. So, I mean, what do you do? Take away billet blocks? I don't know.
Maybe. Or do you go the other way? Do you make it a mountain motor class? Do you make it like, you know, like PDRA or like the IHRA used to have, you know, and just go ahead and allow the huge motors, you know, and part of me thinks that, you know, as we're talking about this, that how much of this is just the fault of NHRA in general, not dropping the ball on it, you know, way beforehand. Like this all has been going on for a long time where they've had short fields, and, you know, what's the problem? I mean, the money has to come from businesses, sponsors, people that want to be involved. So then therefore it's part of NHRA's responsibility to therefore promote the class, you know, and to, you know, to make a big deal about the championship and the points and to make a bigger deal out of the whole thing. You know, I think a lot of times from a promotion standpoint, they fall short. I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, is it part of the fuel injection? It seems to be a drop, you know, since they switched to that as well in teams. You know, maybe going back to carburetors, maybe dialing the rules back a little bit. You know, and making it a little, I don't know, maybe a little cheaper to get involved. And, but I just hate to see it go, because I know that, from a true driver standpoint, it just seems to me that would be the class that you would run. And, I hate to see it on the decline. And I hope that, that NHRA can talk to the teams and get with, the people that really know what's going on and try to figure out how to get it back, into the forefront and like I said, return it to the glory days of, you know, WJ and Bob Glidden and all the greats, you know, that we watched over the years race that class.
Right. Without pro stock, you know, Jed Coughlin Jr. would never be the natural. And guys like that, he'd just still be a big money bracket racer, which I think he would still be excelling at. But, you know, guys like that, the guys that come up through the big money bracket ranks would have no shot, really. I mean, there's a lot of them that hopped at a pro stock car, and like David Rampe and Jay Coughlin Jr. And I don't know, I'm sure there's a few more that are escaping me, but that gives us something that if we ever wanted to go that route, they used to be able to do that. But now with the engine leasing programs and stuff, you know, the six figures per race of what it costs to lease an engine, that's crazy.
Right. And then, you know, what concerns me about it too is the loss of, if we lose the class, then you don't ever want to lose the history. You know, you think about, like, my dad used to run Modified Eliminator, and you know, that was a really big deal back in the day, you know, on a sportsman class standpoint. And, you know, and now that it's been gone, and, you know, they rolled out the super classes, and then they moved some of the Modified Eliminator cars into super stock. And, you know, I think that in a way that kind of waters down the history that had happened in that class beforehand when you no longer run that class anymore. I mean, we all remember, you know, back, what, it wasn't that long ago, pro stock was so popular, they tried another class for pro stock, you know, they rolled out the trucks, and that didn't work, you know. But that I just don't know where we went from that point. I thought that was a great idea at the time, you know, from that point to now where we're not even going to run a full season of it. I mean, is it you know, what takes it place? I mean, is it pro mod, or is it the factory stocks? Or if you took away pro stock, would the teams move to to the factory stock format? Would you see the manufacturer support move there? I think maybe, possibly that you would see more entries and a better competition in that class. Obviously, if there was no pro stock, maybe some of them would roll into that. But just something that I hate to see kind of on the decline.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I don't know what the answer is, if there is an answer, but it's gotta change. It's going to the way of pro stock truck, and it can't really happen like that. Not with the amount of people that still enjoy watching it. You know, I would rather watch pro stock cars all day long compared to fuel cars.
Yeah, no doubt. And so kind of segueing into another thing I saw, and just kind of moving on just a touch, did you see the addition of Top Dragster and Top Sportsman to the U.S. Nationals?
I did not, and it is about time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had 800 cars on the grounds. What is 60 more going to do, or 80 more going to do? You know,
right.
That's a class that absolutely deserves to be at the U.S. Nationals, both of those classes.
Yep, I 100% agree, and it's going to be a great, great field. I can't wait to see what the bump is for both of those classes. I think the record, as far as the bump, will probably be shattered at the 2019 U.S. Nationals.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say that also may depend on weather, but I think that the bad boys are definitely going to show up for that one. It's going to be
all the top alcohol guys are going to put big pulleys on and run six. Flat.
Yeah, there you go. Right, they get another chance at the U.S. Nationals, Wally. Why not?
Right.
So yeah, that's going to be exciting. And you know, with that, I guess that sort of wraps up episode 12 of Dialed In. Certainly appreciate you all tuning in, listening to it, downloading, liking it. We really appreciate it. We went over 1,000 Facebook likes, so there's a milestone. Thank you all very much. We are listened to. I'll probably go into more detail on this. That's what I was talking to Jake about, maybe doing a segment for this when there isn't a more racing to talk about. But we are global. We are being listened to in countries around the world. So pretty exciting. You know, the little idea that Jake and I kicked around and finally decided to jump in and do is rolling along well. And we certainly appreciate all your support. And we're going to continue to do our best and keep trying to bring you a show worth listening to every week. So thank you all very much.
Yeah. And I forgot. I was going to give a shout out to our 1,000th Facebook like. And it was none other than Brad Clark, the driver of the Swamp Buggy.
Nice.
Brandon, Mississippi, if I remember correctly. He has been the target of flying cars in the pit area. Known for wearing a helmet with no visor, with an actual like a hat visor duct taped to the front of it. I have pictures. Anyway, shout out Brad Clark and shout out to Jenna and Kristen. They're out there trying to promote the page and whatnot with sending out invites to like it. So
Everybody coming to Huntsville this weekend, come say hi, get your Dialed In decals and tell us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. And, come shake our hands. We'd like to see you.
Yeah. And I did get a message from a friend of mine, and he said, hey, you guys are being too much like Luke and Jed. And just for everybody to reiterate again, that is not our goal. Luke and Jed are great at what they do, and we're not trying to compete with them whatsoever.
No.
They have a great program, and you should absolutely listen to them. We're not trying to take their business, nothing like that. Of course, we are somewhat similar because we are talking about drag racing.
Yeah, literally the same subject matters. So we're definitely gonna cross subject matter for sure.
I like to think that we're more of showcasing a little guy kind of thing because you or I don't exactly have the sportsman rank knowledge that Luke and Jed do. So
right. Yeah, that's definitely the goal is to shed a little more light on the grassroots side of bracket racing. That's what we're trying to do. And to just put something else out there that has to do with the sport that we're passionate about and love and that we want to share with other people. So, that's all this is about. And we certainly appreciate everybody. And yeah, listen to the Sportsman Drag Racing Podcast with Luke and Jed. Those guys are awesome. They do a great job. I listen to it every week. So listen to them. Listen to Dialed In. And everybody, we have safe travels wherever you're going racing this weekend. And everybody have a happy Thanksgiving as well. Enjoy that with your families. And we will see you in the staging lanes.
Yep. Have a good one, guys.